Occult crimes, paranormal investigations, urban legends, and strange happenings. Welcome to Myths, Magic, and Murder.
Hey, welcome to Myths, Magic, and Murder.
This is episode 108. I'm Abby.
I'm Kate, and it's October.
We was already said that, yes.
Well, it's still October. Surprise!
It is October. That's how the year works, is that the days go, but the months slow.
And we're your ghostesses.
Sorry.
Perfect. I think that's a great way to start an episode.
Okay. Did I already say my name?
Yeah.
What is wrong with me today?
You said your name, I said mine, and then I forgot to say that we were ghostesses.
Oh.
I just said it's October again.
Well, are you going to say that every time?
Yeah. Well, even when it's November.
Okay.
Really spook me out.
Don't, because that will really confuse me.
Whoa.
What are you talking about today, Kate?
This week, I'll be telling you about an Australian cult with the creepiest name, The Family.
Love that. I'll be talking about the self-help group / cult, Nexium. And obviously, like everything we've covered on the podcast, it's not going to be, you know, some stuff we cover and it's nicer and we can joke a bit. Some stuff is a bit more serious. It's probably going to be a bit more of a serious one. So if you don't want that, then go listen to our last one where we talked about shitting in the woods.
Oh, yeah. And clickbait.
Oh, yeah. You won't believe what happens in that episode.
You won't believe. That's it.
10 reasons why you should listen to that episode.
No. See, here's where you're wrong. It's got to be like 17 great reasons why. Like, it's always a number plucked out of thin air.
Oh, she knows SEO.
It's like four. Four reasons. And I'm like, what? I need more than that.
And the last reason is like,
you just should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we start, let's talk about the news this week. Do you remember recently on the show, we talked about pareidolia? A word I've still not pronounced correctly, I'm sure, but I've never once searched how to do that.
When you see faces in things that don't have faces.
Exactly that. Well, from The Conversation, which is the news source, a man named Robin Kramer, senior lecturer in the School of Psychology at Lincoln University, proposes that the increased levels of oxytocin, often dubbed the love hormone, might heighten face pareidolia in women who have recently given birth.
Wow.
Yeah, so the study found that postpartum women were more prone to seeing faces in random patterns, and they thought it might be oxytocin, but it might be too simple of an answer right now, but they're still studying it, because stress, fatigue, and other factors could also influence the results. Also, they found that different people experience different levels of susceptibility to pareidolia. So if you believe in paranormal stuff, or if you're lonely, you might see it more often. But if you have autism or face blindness, you might get it less.
Wow.
I just thought you'd find that interesting.
I do find that interesting.
And relevant. And also, my mum the other day sent me a photo of a pie and said, chicken has a face.
So which theory are you going with?
She's got a lot of love for me.
Aw. That's nice. I actually got into my university because I wrote an essay about oxytocin.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, well, it wasn't about it, but I mentioned it. Yeah, in my, what's it called when you write that thing?
Your personal statement?
Yes. Yeah, that's what I mentioned in my one. Because I was like, this is a hip new thing. Because like, there isn't that much research done into oxytocin yet. So.
Wow. Yeah. In my personal statement to get into university, I wrote just an insane amount of nothingness. I don't even remember what I wrote, but I remember I took it to my tutor, the person that was helping me get into uni, and she was like, you need to get rid of half of this because it's completely irrelevant. Like, why have you written that? Mm-hmm. This was a project you did when you were 10. And I was like, it was, I don't know, it's relevant. And she's like, no, it's not.
Yeah, I wrote about a book I was reading called Reaching Down the Rabbit Hole, which is an incredible book, and oxytocin and some other stuff that was current at the time. I went on like an expedition, I think. So I wrote about that. I'm not really sure. I still write about that now. Like, it's in my CV because I'm like, I don't, what do people do that they write about?
I don't know.
Me neither.
What do people do?
What? Tell us what you do.
What do you be doing?
Yeah. Tell us your profession on Instagram.
Let's talk about cults.
Okay. It's me first. Me first. Shove you out of the way. My sources are Wikipedia, BBC, allthat'sinteresting.com, mamamia.com.au, and theguardian.com. Okay.
Mario is your source for this.
Source? Mario is your source?
Hey, Mario is your source for this.
Okay, so this cult started back in the mid-1960s. Which, from what we've seen, seems to be the prime time to start a cult.
Oh, yeah. Real cult hours.
It's like that saying about planting a tree. Like, the best time to plant a tree was in the 1960s.
Mm.
The next best time to plant a tree is now.
And that's why I'm starting a cult.
Yeah.
But not, like, a bad one.
No.
Not like these ones.
No, we'll call it a commune, like everyone else does.
But we won't do anything bad, really. We're just going to, like, toast marshmallows.
And torture people.
No, wait, what?
Sorry, I said toast marshmallows.
Torture people with our Christmas album that we're releasing that we just talked about on Patreon.
We aren't.
Please. We're not doing that.
Please
but
don't.
We might.
No, stop trying to soft release our Christmas album that we haven't done.
Merry Christmas, spooky ones.
Anyway, sometime around 1964, a lady called Anne Hamilton Byrne started a religious and philosophical discussion group at Santiniketan Park. I'm so sorry if I've said that wrong. It was located on the eastern outskirts of Melbourne in Fernie Creek. Which, side note, Fernie Creek sounds like the most adorable place in the entire world.
Mm.
Anne Hamilton Byrne was born in 1921 as Evelyn Edwards and was the eldest of seven children. Her mother died a few years later in an asylum as she was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic after setting her hair alight in the street. Her father then put Anne in and out of orphanages throughout her childhood. When Anne grew up, she married a man and had a daughter with him. However, she then lost her husband in a car accident, so she threw herself into yoga as an escape. She liked the connections to Eastern religion, and yoga was still relatively unknown to most of the rest of the world, so she took up teaching yoga to others in Melbourne and was kind of like the figurehead of that kind of like spirituality.
That's nice. I hope everything else is
Yeah,
helpful.
And then that's the end. Everything just was fine.
What a wholesome release.
Wrong.
Oh.
She gained money and popularity within the community, and apparently she looked more like an urban socialite than anything else. Because everyone, when the news about the cult came out, everyone was kind of expecting this, like, crazy hippie lady, but she just looks like a wealthy woman.
Oh.
In 1961, Anne met Dr. Rayner Johnson, and the pair started the Great White Brotherhood, a.k.a. the family and the Santiniketan Park Association. I'm going to call it the family because the Great White Brotherhood sounds problematic. The family is problematic, but that sounds way more problematic.
What if it's a group of sharks?
I can tell you now, unfortunately, there are no sharks allowed. That's a
That's
rule.
That's a really rude thing
That's
to put.
That's a rule they have.
In
not.
My cult, where everything's normal and we don't do anything bad.
You have to be a great white shark to enter.
Great white sharks are welcome. Everybody's welcome.
They're not mandatory, but they're allowed.
Bring your shark to cult day.
I'm excited for you to make art for bring your shark to cult day. So, the family started off with regular meetings at Dr. Rayner's house every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday. But the group grew in size and wealth, so by 1968, they were able to buy the plot of land next door to his house. Here, they built a meeting hall dubbed Santiniketan Lodge. The family believed in a mixture of Christian and Hindu beliefs with dashes of other religions sprinkled in, so it was kind of like a clusterfuck of all religions, but like focusing on like Eastern
okay,
belief.
That makes sense.
The basis for the beginnings of the family was that Anne believed that she was the reincarnation of Jesus Christ.
Oh, here we go.
Yep. And described herself as a living God.
It always goes here. And I know that's the point, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it. Just have a nice time. Just live with your friends. And yeah. Do yoga and not think that you're Jesus.
This podcast sometimes feels like a TV show, right? Where you're watching and, like, you love the characters. No, like, you're watching and you're like, man, I just wish everyone would have a nice day. I wish that they would show me an episode where people just get to have fun and hang out with each other, eat a nice meal, take a bath and go to bed. Like, on time.
We do. It's episode 100.
No, it's not. Not us. That's not what I mean. I mean the stories that we're telling.
Oh, yes. No, I agree.
Spoiler, I take a bath and go to bed on time. But, like, these people never have a good day. I'm never talking about people having a good day.
Maybe we should do it and say, well, everyone has a good day.
Maybe we should. Let us know if you want to hear people having a good day. Tell us your having a good day stories.
Yes. Tell us everything good that's happened.
Tell us everything about you. Social security number.
What's your mother's maiden name?
What was the street you grew up on?
First pet.
The family believed that people like Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, and Anne were enlightened beings and had come to help humanity. As the family grew in size, they made an inner circle, because of course they did.
Yes.
Who claimed to be reincarnations of the 12 apostles.
That's convenient, isn't it?
Yeah. The wealth grew so quickly within the group because they were middle-class professionals. Like, they weren't random people, you know, like how in a lot of cults they kind of target the vulnerable, like people without houses, people that, you know, do drugs, that kind of thing. Middle class people do drugs and some don't have houses, I guess, but like
struggling with addiction more so than doing drugs. Yeah, but yeah,
exactly.
I know what you mean.
Like, they were all middle class, all of them. They were like socialites, they were all professionals, a quarter of them were medical professionals.
Oh, that's a bit unnerving.
Just you wait.
Oh, God.
The recruitment was done through Anne's yoga classes, which is how she got rid of these people. Yeah, because she was finding, like, housewives that were able to go to yoga classes, like, during the week, or, like, had enough money to go and do a yoga class.
You'd for sure think that it was a safe and normal thing to do as well. I mean, I don't know what happens next, but I'm presuming something not good. But, like, if I was in a yoga class and the teacher was like, hey, you should come and join this group, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, like, hey, we talk about, like, spirituality and religion, and, like, it's totally chill. You can, you know, do whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if you were, like, a housewife, because a lot of people do things like that because they want, like, friends and stuff to do because they're not, like, working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if you're, like, new to the area.
Yeah, you want to, like, meet people, exactly.
Yeah. One medical professional within the family was Marion Villemek, who owned and managed New Haven Hospital. This was a private psychiatric hospital over in Kew, and the recruitment into the family continued here. Allegedly, many of the staff and
the psychiatric hospital?
Yep. Many of the staff and attending psychiatrists became members, and the family recruited some of the patients into the group. So here's where, like, it's branching out into possibly vulnerable people.
Right.
Then the psychiatrists that were part of the family started to administer medication.
Oh no.
In other words, LSD, to both the patients of New Haven and also to some of the regular members of the family. Additionally, one specific inner member was subjected to electroshock therapy and 2 lobotomies.
Oh my God.
It wasn't just the other members that partook in LSD, though. Anne herself allegedly took some and realized that her mission while she was on Earth as, like, the chosen one was to adopt dozens of children to save them from the coming apocalypse.
No, I don't think that's a good idea.
No. If only you'd have been there to tell her that.
I'm sure she would have listened to me.
Yeah. You look trustworthy. You wear a hat. So, between 1968 and 1975...
Also, sorry, if you're listening, I'm wearing a beanie. I'm not wearing, like, a fancy hat. The way that you said that implied that I was wearing a fancy hat.
She's wearing a fedora and she does every episode. So, anyway, between 1968 and 1975, Anne and her second husband, William, adopted 14 infants.
14?
Now, adopted is definitely a loose term, because there was nothing really legal about it.
Where did they get them from?
Some of the children were given to Anne from other members of the family.
Like, oh my God.
Their own children as, like, offerings. Others were illegally adopted because within the family you had lawyers, doctors, and social workers. So they kind of knew, like, loopholes and how
Jesus
to get
Christ.
Around. Yeah, like, legal procedure. All of the names of the children were changed illegally using false birth certificates and deed polls. They all had the same last name, Hamilton Byrne, and had to wear identical clothes and have their hair bleached blonde. Unless they were redheads, because apparently Anne had originally been a redhead, so that was acceptable.
Okay.
In terms of the identical clothes the kids had to wear, apparently it was reminiscent of the Von Trapp family from The Sound of Music. They were, like, clad in velvets and smart shoes.
This sounds terrifying.
Everything had to be perfectly polished and looking identical. And it was, like, the idea of family and brother and sisterhood was like really driven home. Like you are all one.
Okay.
The most children there ever were being forced to live within the cult was 28.
Oh my goodness.
So an entire school class.
Yeah, that's a lot of children.
Yeah. Speaking of school, they were homeschooled at Kai Lama, which was also known as Up Top, which is horrific. You start giving things names like Up Top and the family, it's weird.
Mm-hmm. I much prefer Lama.
It's L-A-M-A. Sorry. This was a building in a very rural area on Lake Eildon in Victoria. The children had little to no access to the outside world and were given doses of a whole bunch of sedatives, antidepressants, and antipsychotics. In addition to this, they were forced into starvation diets and were allegedly beaten.
God, Jesus.
When the children hit puberty, they had to be initiated into the family, even though there was no initiation process for other adults that would join. In the initiation, they were given LSD and kept alone in a dark room, subjected to visits from Anne or one of the psychiatrist members of the family. Not all of the children were as compliant as Anne wanted them to be, though. For example, a girl named Sarah used to argue with Anne, and eventually Anne had had enough and expelled her in 1987 because of the constant rebellion. Sarah went to a private investigator shortly after and brought information about the family to Victoria Police, which is why on the 14th of August 1987, the police raided Kai Lama, the school, and removed all of the children from the premises. It wasn't as easy as it could have been because the children didn't know that their upbringing wasn't normal, mm-hmm. So they tried to fight the police. While this was happening, Anne and her husband had enough time to go on the run.
Ugh.
Police forces in Australia, the USA, and the UK all worked together under Operation Forest to try and find Anne and her husband. And after 6 years,
wow,
in June 1993, they were found in New York by the FBI. They were then extradited back to Australia, where they were charged with conspiracy to defraud and commit perjury by falsely registering the births of three unrelated children as their own triplets. These charges were later dropped, but the couple did plead guilty to making a false declaration and they were fined to $5,000 each. Obviously, it's US dollars.
Australian dollars.
The three other family members were tried at court and convicted of falsely obtaining over $81,000 between them within 9 years, which rockets up to $104,000 when including Anne's conviction for the same crime. Within 9 years.
Wow.
Which is nothing compared to the amount that Anne amassed through property, land, and cash donations, which was estimated at $150 million.
Wow, that's crazy.
The $5,000 Anne had to pay at court was her only punishment.
That's it?
She later had to settle two cases of financial compensation, one from a family member and one from her granddaughter. Again,
Not really her granddaughter,
yeah. The total settlements for them both were $500,000, and that was around 2009-ish.
Mm-hmm.
However, no other family members were able to claim for compensation against her because she was diagnosed with dementia, which to many felt unjust because Anne had broken up families, destroyed marriages, and left her child victims with lifelong trauma.
Yeah, can you imagine growing up after that? You wouldn't...
No.
It would be so difficult.
Multiple people took their own lives while they were in the family or shortly after they had left. Anne continued to live in a nursing home until she died in 2019, aged 97, which finally ended the family once and for all.
Wow. What a wild story.
Yep. I was like, I don't know how I haven't heard of that.
No, I've not heard of it either. It seems like a big scale as well of all of the different governments were mm-hmm. trying to find her.
Yeah.
Glad that they did. It's a shame that her punishment was so measly.
Pathetic, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why that was her punishment. I didn't get into the court proceedings of everything.
I suppose they just didn't have enough evidence to charge her for certain things.
Yeah, you can't prove things. And there's documentaries of it online where mm-hmm. they've spoken, like... reporters have spoken to Anne herself and they're like, what about the child abuse? And she was like, I would never abuse a child.
Yeah, if you can't prove that,
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do? Like,
yeah.
You know, and especially the law can only do so much.
Yeah. And like where the kids have grown up with that being their norm, I completely understand why it would be hard to prove, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Ooh.
Crazy.
Well, if you like middle class people in a cult, you're going to love my story.
I thought you were about to plug us. I thought that was how you were plugging us.
Oh my God.
I thought you were like, if you like middle class people in a cult, then head over to midsmagicandmurder.com.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
But completely unrelated to that, if you like the podcast and you want to follow us on social media, you can do that at MythsMagicPod on Facebook and on Instagram. And if you want to head over to Patreon, you can do that at patreon.com/MythsMagicMurder.
Over on the cult, I mean Patreon, we give you video footage of ourselves every single week. You can see my beautiful red hair. Wow. And Abby's little hat that she wears.
My big top hat.
And this one piece of eyeliner that she just smudged all over her face. Wonderful. Anyway, over on the Patreon, you also get a discount on our merch. The merch will be changing soon, very soon, I believe. And you can view it over on mythsmagicandmurder.com. Also on the website, you can tell us your terrifying tales, haunted happenings, and spooky stories. And that's it. I want to hear them.
Yes, also because this is a serious episode, a cult episode, there is also links on the website for resources, charities, and things that you can visit if you are affected by anything mentioned in the episode.
Okay.
Anyway, let's talk about Nexium, the rise of Nexium, which, by the way, is spelled N-X-I-V-M.
I was going to say, isn't that like a brand? Like a.
It's the medicine.
Yeah.
I don't know what the medicine is for, but I have seen it because I made a joke about it when I was there with you in the shop. I was like, hey, this is what I'm talking about. It's not spelled like that. N-X-I-V-M, but it's pronounced Nexium. The group was founded in 1998 by a man named Keith Raniere. Keith was born in Brooklyn in 1960, and when he was 12, he read a book named The Second Foundation by Isaac Asimov. The book is one in a series of science fiction novels based on the subject of mind control. Worryingly, this gave 12-year-old Keith inspiration for Nexium, which is a little bit of foreshadowing as to what's to come. Keith barely passed university, but he did end up graduating and becoming a computer scientist anyway. His father attempted to inspire Keith by telling him that he was a smart and special person. And Keith was the kind of person you didn't want to say that to, because it was like a switch went off in his brain, and he immediately just decided that he was superior to everybody and that he was godlike. It's important to note that this wasn't based on nothing. Like, Keith was a very intelligent person. He was a member of the Mega Society, M-E-G-A, which is a high IQ society for those who have scored very highly on a particular test called the Mega Test.
Oh, okay. Is the mega test still around?
I don't think so.
Oh.
It's quite... There's a lot of debate around it. Keith himself, so take it with a pinch of salt, claimed that he spoke in full sentences by the time he was one, taught himself high school maths in a few hours when he was 12, and by the time he was 13, he had learned several computer languages.
Mm-hmm.
So from what he was saying, but also from this test and stuff, it seems like he was one of those people that's really, really intelligent, but doesn't perform well in academia.
Right.
Which is why he didn't do well in university. But I don't know. Also, it doesn't matter. Fortunately for Keith, and unfortunately for the rest of the world, his interests didn't lie in academia anyway, and he decided he was destined for something greater.
Mm.
So in the 1980s, he met a woman named Nancy Salzman, a nurse from New Jersey. She was also a practitioner of hypnosis. Well, actually, before he met Nancy, his girlfriend Tony did. And Tony had met Nancy to ask for help because her boyfriend Keith seemed erratic and acted superior to everybody that he met. And Nancy was like...
God, it's a good thing Nancy was just like, let's help Keith, huh?
Nancy was like, yeah, I'll help you. He sounds like a sociopath. I'll meet up with him. However, when Nancy met Keith... She came out of the room speaking with Keith for a while and was like, you don't know who he is. Like, he's different. Because she'd also fallen victim
Nancy
to Keith's
charm. Nancy
was like,
charm. I can change him.
Nancy was like, wow, he actually is special, though. He's not a sociopath.
No. Anyone that tells you they're special, they're immediately not.
Yeah.
Like, they're immediately, something is up. You know what I mean? You don't get people saying, yeah, I'm just really special. When, like, they are. You know, I feel like if you're genuinely that special, you're kind of humble.
Yeah, I think the people who are the cleverest don't go around telling everybody they're the cleverest.
Yeah, and
if someone else is like, oh, that person's really clever, that person's really special, that's different.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you walk into a room and say, like, I'm just better.
Maybe I'll just try it.
Maybe it'll give you the confidence you need to do some things.
Maybe in my therapy session after this, I'll walk into the room and go, I'm just really special.
See what she says.
I will.
Then you can report back.
Yeah, I can't make another episode because I'm sectioned.
Yeah. So Keith and Nancy decided that they needed to help people, and they founded a personal development company that offered various techniques to improve yourself. This was branded Nexium. The first red flag with Nexium, and you're going to love this, is that Keith didn't go by Keith. He went by Vanguard. And Call Nancy went by Prefect.
Man went, what's my favorite PS5 game?
Yes, because this was set now.
Yeah. And she went by what, sorry?
Prefect.
Ew. Ew, you got to pick your name and you picked school prefect.
Not school prefect, just prefect.
That gives me the ick.
I would be called...
I'm presuming I can bully these people because they're mean, right?
They are mean.
Okay, great.
Enthused by the prospect of self-help, nearly 4,000 people had joined by 2003. Many of these people were very wealthy and high profile. They were actors, heiresses, and business people. And they'd all flocked to Nexium to improve their well-being and level themselves up. It's kind of what they were saying. Many of these people now deny partaking in the classes, and eventually the amount of people rose to about 20,000.
Jeez.
Kind of like Scientology, except, you know where Scientology, like, there's like rumors that bad things are happening, but... nothing has been, like, caught that they have to stop Scientology. People still do it. It's, like, really popular.
Yeah.
Kind of the same level, where it's a bunch of, like, really rich people all joining this, like, self-help thing. Huge group.
Why don't we both do middle-class cults?
I don't know.
There's something in that.
When you join Nexium, you had to sign an NDA to protect their trade secrets. Keith claimed that Nexium could make people better at office politics, unleash their inner executive, learn languages, and reduce symptoms of things like Tourette's, diabetes, and scoliosis. Quite how he was doing that, I don't know. Keith's followers were devoted to him and to the program. They thought him to be a gentle genius who could improve them physically, mentally, and financially. Also at this point, Keith grew his hair and beard out to resemble Jesus. He had no driving license and no bank account, but he talked softly and claimed that he didn't take any money from the group, even though they were making up to $4 million a year.
Do not trust him. So they all trusted him. Called Keith.
Keith, if you're listening. Sorry, not this Keith. Different Keith.
Love you, Keith.
However, while they were booming by 2003, it was also the first time someone spoke out against the group. A businessman named Edgar Bronfman Sr. and his two daughters, Claire and Sarah, enrolled in Nexium, and for a while, Edgar endorsed the program. However, after a while, he realized he hadn't talked to his daughters in months, and he was becoming increasingly more stressed out and overwhelmed by the sheer amount of emotional and financial investment into the group. Edgar came forward and exposed the group in an issue of Forbes in October of 2003.
Mm-hmm.
He claimed that Nexium was a cult, where Keith excelled at breaking people down psychologically, and they were separated from their families and forced to engage in ritualistic practices. In this article, it was revealed that people paid $10,000 for 5 days of lectures and emotional sessions that last 13 hours a day. They removed their shoes and wear coloured sashes to show their ranks. And when a high-ranking student enters the room, they have to bow to one another. Also, they have to bow to Vanguard when he makes an appearance, which increasingly became less often.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the high-ranking members were simply higher because they'd recruited more people. So at its core, this was like an MLM.
I was going to say it's an MLM.
They recruit more people, and so they become more important to Keith because there's more people, there's more money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the quotes from Keith in the teachings and the teaching in the Forbes article suggest that many of the teachings within the group were geared towards helping yourself, focusing on yourself and ignoring the needy, which they referred to as parasites. So there's a big emphasis on not making yourself a victim, but not destroying others either.
Yikes.
Yeah, quote, "It is essential for the survival of humankind that the world's wealth and resources be controlled by successful, ethical people." It is said that one of the teachings of the program was to encourage the members of the group to trust Nexium over trusting their own decisions, and this would lead them to a better path. Other programs include learning about psychopaths and their followers, and reaping the benefits after your partner dies and other bizarre things that they taught for some reason. And I guess everyone thought that was normal? I don't know.
I think it's one of those things where when it's starting, you're like, oh, it's a bit weird, but it's fine because this, that, and the other. And then when you join, you're like, well, everyone else is fine with this, so I'm not going to be the one to ask.
Massively wealthy people do insane shit just to feel something.
Like that candle.
What?
Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina candle.
Oh, yeah. Like the candle.
That's insane. I love her for it.
Yeah, we compare that. We compare Goop to NXIVM.
No, but you know what I mean? When people have too much money, they spend it on crazy things.
They just do wacky stuff for some reason.
They're just like, well, I can.
I think it's because when you, I mean, I don't know, and I'm not a psychologist, and I don't know anything about psychology, but it kind of feels like if you're the kind of person that is, you know, getting enough money that you get a paycheck, and then you use the paycheck to pay for, like, rent and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, you have to think about other things. I feel like the main goal for a lot of people is to get more money, mm-hmm. because that's just kind of what's ingrained in you.
Yeah.
And I feel like people who are so rich that they don't need to think about anything at all, there's nothing they have to think about. They can just do anything whenever they want ever.
Yeah.
There must be a greater sort of need for purpose. Because I imagine that if you can have anything, if you're like so rich that you can have anything you want at any time, mm-hmm. like not like rich like, oh, I earn this much money a year and I have a nice house. Like a really rich person. You must get so fucking bored. Like, not bored that's because you must thing. Be like, oh, I need to get like a purpose. I need to like learn about myself and be better and more interesting.
I don't even think it's that. I think it's just the dopamine hit.
Mm.
Like, when you go out and you're like, I'll just buy a coffee and not even see how much it is. You know what I mean? Like, you get like a thrill. Right? Like, it's not as far as to say a thrill, but you get like, you know, oh, which is why shopping therapy and retail therapy is a thing.
Fair, yeah, it's like exciting.
Yeah, like you feel good and you're treating yourself and you're like, I can really enjoy that. But when you have that much money, it's like when you become addicted to a substance, right? You're always chasing that first high.
Mm.
I think it's like that, except you already have 5 cars and 3 houses. So what are you going to buy next? Oh, cult membership.
Yeah, like I want to be part of this thing now.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other like-minded people that are in this cult.
Yeah.
It's like what you were saying about like the housewives going to yoga.
Yeah, you want to meet other people, network.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And
like,
I suppose you kind of
understand the issues that you're going through. Like your issue won't be, I can't afford rent this month. Your issue will be, people only want to be friends with me because I have money.
But yeah, I mean, if you can afford $10,000 for 5 days of stuff, mm-hmm. then you're probably the kind of person that is, you know, looking for this for some reason. And I guess when they start gradually increasing the rules and things, you don't even notice. I don't know. But one woman who took part in the classes suffered from severe hallucinations and had a public breakdown where she was taken to hospital and treated for psychosis, likely from long hours of obscure classes and sleepless nights.
Mm-hmm.
However, for the most part, people did feel happier. And I suppose because of the element of community, you get rewarded for your achievements. And also, people are making decisions for you. Which I don't think happens to a lot of people when they are that wealthy. And also, in general, it's nice when people make decisions for you sometimes because you don't have to think about what you're going to do.
Yeah, there's something nice about it where other people take control. And, like, it's that kind of, like, it's why, for example, things like sort of, like, role play and stuff in, like, sex is a thing. Because it's like, it's nice to not have to like decide what you're going to do or to have someone else take charge if that's not normally happens.
It's why usually like people go to like retreats and stuff, right? Because you can focus on yourself and other people will be like, this is what you're eating. This is what we're going to do next. You know, in school, you don't have to think about things like that because you're just doing the task.
And also it must be nice.
It must be freeing.
Yeah, and it must be nice to be beholden to someone else because although like if you have a private chef, if you have a maid, like they work for you. So, like, although they're deciding what you're eating, you're still in control.
You're in charge.
Yeah, whereas if you go to a retreat, they're like, no phones, give it here. And you can't be like, no, fuck you, because they'll just be like, get out then.
Yeah, like, why are you paying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, people were happier because of this. But as we all know from learning about cults, things like isolation, keeping you from your family, sleep deprivation, and encouraging people to trust in you completely never ends well.
Nope.
So that's obviously what happened here. The group also utilized something called an exploration of meaning session, where someone would confess something to you, and it was sold as like a therapy to expel bad energy, but in reality, it was used to hoard bad information about you to blackmail you later on.
Cool.
As I mentioned earlier, Nancy was a practitioner of hypnosis, and Keith had an interest in controlling people, the two worst kinds of people in this kind of expensive health group.
Yeah, they're like really a power couple for a cult.
Yeah. Keith was also a sexual sadist, and in the next part, we're going to be discussing that, just so you're aware of it. Now, are you familiar with, this is very random, Alison Mack?
No.
She played Chloe in Smallville.
I've never watched Smallville.
Well, I was a fan of it when I was on TV.
Okay.
But she was one of the characters in it. So she was on TV. It was like a...
No way. Her from Smallville?
It's just because what happened is quite wild.
Okay.
So Nexium, as an organization, had subgroups within the main group.
Of course.
Like what you said. So groups for the chosen few important people. And there were tons of these groups. So I don't know how many important people there must have been. But if this sounds like a red flag, it's because it is. There were two groups that played a prominent role in the downfall of Nexium. One of them was called Jeunesse, and one of them was called DOS. And Alison Mack also played a prominent role in both of these. So in the groups, she was known as the Madam.
I love that.
You do? I think it gives me like...
We've spoken about this before in our private lives, where if I'm in a cult, my name is the Love Governor.
Don't say in our private lives. That makes it sound like we're doing some weird stuff.
Well, yeah, okay. In the cult that we're forming.
Oh my God. No, we have had a conversation about it though.
We've had a conversation with our friends about starting a commune because it would be wonderful. And I was dubbed, I didn't pick this name, I was dubbed the Love Governor.
Because Kate says Gavna.
No, I don't.
You do.
No, I don't.
Your little accent.
But the accent would lead people to believe that I would say Gavna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People love that. The Americans love that when you said that just then.
They were like, yeah, that's why we listen.
So she joined Nexium in 2007. And over the years, she recruited over 20 women into the cult. The Madam was one of Keith's personal slaves. We're not beating around the bush here, that's the gist of it. So Keith had several personal slaves, and then those slaves had slaves below them. And it's also reported that Keith's first slave was a 15-year-old girl, very normal.
Oh.
Masters counted their slaves' calories to save them from emotional eating. They enforced cold showers and have them wake up at 4 a.m. for discipline reasons. These women were, amongst other things, literally branded. And during this process, they were nude and filmed for collateral. It was intended to look like a ritualistic sacrifice, and it was Keith's idea. So in an actual voice recording that we have access to, he suggested it to Alison, and he was like, we should really like brand these people, and we should ask them so that they say, can I be branded on video, so that what it doesn't look like they were forced into it. Alison was like, great idea. And then she organized a branding ritual where the women would sit naked on a rug in like a white room on like a soft rug, all very cultish. And then they hold each other down to be branded. Now, the thing is that this group, DOS, which is what happened here, it was marketed as being important to the group to experience vulnerability with other women. So like discover your true self, which I guess like makes
sense
on paper. So Alison had even like spoken in like magazines and stuff about like, you should come and join this group. Or, like, I am in charge of this group because it's like being vulnerable and like emotionally available with other women. We all like share stories. It's like really great. It's like a symbol for, it's like sisterhood.
That would be fine if you weren't burning people, Alison.
Yeah, but it wasn't like that though, was it? And also, this is going to make you go crazy. The symbol they were branded with, they were told it was a Latin symbol for sisterhood to represent the group. However, if you turn it and look at it properly, it's Keith Raniere's initials.
People have that on them for lives.
Yep.
Like, for life. That is on them.
Yep.
You can't even get that removed. Nope. It's not like a tattoo.
No, that's there.
You have that. Yep. It's scarred into you forever.
Yep. Alison quickly became Keith's right-hand man, essentially. So she encouraged like an aspiring actress to join the group by telling her it was a mentorship program.
No.
But she had to hand over collateral. So the woman handed her over a sex tape and also had to perform an obscure sexual ritual to enter the group. Alison also encouraged other women to seduce Keith to empower them. That was part of their like sisterhood thing.
Sisters.
So she's basically manipulating it into being like, Keith is so special. Like, you should like seduce him. It'll be really good for you. But obviously Keith is obviously just thinking like, Allison, get some women to have sex with me. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's problematic. Definitely. I'm not on her side at all, but it's a clever way of getting people to join the cult. If you're like, I'm a celebrity. And
yeah, well, that's why she was such a big prominent part in it, because like, she was like well known at the time.
You should come and like have girl time with me, and we'll be vulnerable with each other. Like, it's clever.
Yeah, and there were a lot of people who were famous as well, but she was famous at the time because Smallville now, I mean, I say it, you haven't even seen it. I watched it when I was younger, but even then it was on like rerun shows. But like,
yeah, it's all like an episode.
This was like 2007. And that was her, like, breakthrough role. People were familiar with her. And there were other people that were famous, but they weren't as prominent in the cult. So her being that high up and you know, people know her at the time. Jesus. It's kind of a big deal. Allison said that Jeunesse, the other group that she ran, was the most gratifying thing she's ever done. And then at this one point, a man named Mark Vicente was one of Keith's most loyal followers. And while he felt fine in the group, he was concerned for the women in DOS because he noticed how malnourished they look. And so he was like, okay, that's a bit weird. I need to, like, you know, keep an eye on this. So he looked further into it. And then someone told him exactly what was happening in that group. And he was like, is this group good? Or am I part of an evil organization now that is posing as a self-help group?
Yes.
And luckily, he contacted the FBI.
Good for you. What was his name?
Mark.
Good for you, Mark.
Keith was arrested in Mexico in early 2018, and five of his higher-ups, including Allison Mack and Nancy Saltzman, were also charged later that year. At Keith's trial, testimony revealed that Keith convinced the women in the group that his semen had supernatural qualities that could heal them spiritually.
Wow!
So that was also an encouraging thing.
It's giving Spider-Man.
Mm. He was sentenced to 120 years in prison in 2020. Yeah. Allison was facing up to 20 years in prison, but somehow got away with only getting 3 years. And this is a huge thing. There is so much information.
So she's out now?
Should be, yeah. Or, I don't know when the trial was, 2018, he was sentenced in 2020. Yeah, she'd be getting out now. Just slap on the wrist.
Wow. But
yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, if you're interested, I would encourage you to read the stuff. There's a lot of stuff on it. There's a lot of video footage, just a lot of audio recordings, because it was, you know, it was recent, really.
I can't
pad it out because I'm going to be here forever.
Yeah, know? Like normally we pussyfoot around. Normally we're like, allegedly, you know, apparently, unless we have proof that we have seen with our own eyes, because we're like, okay, first of all, don't want to get in trouble. Second of all, I don't want to say something that isn't true.
Yeah, I mean, they've been charged for it now. So obviously it is true, at least in the eyes of the law. Yeah. So we can say that.
Yeah, but that, like, with that amount of evidence as well that is still available to you to mm-hmm. see.
It's crazy as well to hear them just discuss so casually these things. That's like the audio recording about the branding, he's just like, yeah, maybe we should, like, you know, we should get people to record it and, like, maybe they should be, like, nude. And she's like, yeah, that's, like, a really great idea. And I'm like, they're just on, like, a walk or something.
Listen, I get it if that's what you're into. Totally get it. Happy for you, right? Find someone that is consensual and we'll do that with you, right? I'm not kink shaming anyone here, but when you get a group of people that are below you, that's an abuse of power.
Of course it is, yeah.
Like, you can't do things
but
like
he knew that
in a cult.
Because he's clever.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, for everyone else out there, like, that's your shtick. You do you, hon. But, like, make sure that everyone is a consenting adult, going back to the 15-year-old point that you made. And, like, you can't, like, it's one thing having, like, power play, right, between, like, people, but you are actually in charge of them. You are actually restricting them, calling them your slaves. Like, you are actually, like, that is actually true. It's not, like, a fetish thing. Like, they are your slaves.
Yeah, I mean, in the context of this, he recruited a bunch of people. He made them all sleep deprived, learn a bunch of stuff, told them that he was this godly person. They all believed it. He acted really, really sweet and nice. He pocketed all the money. And then he recruited people to recruit other people so that he could use them for abuse and power.
That's insane.
It's wild. And it was such a high profile thing. There were so many big people in this, like a lot of people. People that you wouldn't know, so I'm not going to read a list, but like there's a Wikipedia page on it, I'm sure. You know, there's a list of people.
I've been living under a rock. It makes sense.
You wouldn't, I mean, and it's an American thing, so a lot of them are American people, or they're older, and, you know, you probably aren't familiar with them. But, like, other people listening might be. But, yeah, like, it was a high-profile thing. It's Wow. Very interesting.
How do I know nothing?
About anything or about cults?
About anything. I know nothing about anything. You'll like talk to me about a current true crime thing and I'm like, I had no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I'm interested in it. Obviously, it was my idea to do the podcast.
I don't know.
And I'm like, I've never heard of that before. Like, Jonestown. I hadn't heard of it.
I don't know. That's wild.
They're like big players.
Yeah.
In the cult world.
Yeah, in the cult community. Yeah, I don't know. I yeah, no, I don't know. You are just, you're floating through time and space. You exist only to play little games and eat little treats.
Mm, yeah. I tried Takis for the first time. Mm,
blue.
So blue.
So spicy.
I love them. I love them. They're great.
It's a big deal here getting those kind of things because they're really expensive in the corner shops here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we don't sell them.
Yeah, my friend bought me them and I was like, yay, thank you. Because I've been talking about how I wanted to try them and I wasn't expecting him to buy them for me.
And crunchy.
Came out of the shop and he had them and I was like, oh my god, they're blue. And they actually were blue. I thought it was like a branding thing, but it wasn't. They were blue.
How do they make it blue? I don't know how I feel about that.
I like the taste. I like the crunch.
So crunchy.
It's great.
I'm very good at spicy food.
And I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, so it's been a great time for Kate.
Yeah. Don't listen before bed.
Listen before bed.